Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Hunter ceiling fans. They provide consistent comfort all year round and also help reduce energy costs. Right now, save big on Hunter ceiling fans when you shop at Menards. View our entire selection of Hunter ceiling fans today on Menards.com. Plus, our weekly flyer with plenty more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own.
Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 364. I cannot believe we're almost at 400, girl. I'm still Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Kate O. Kate, thank you so much for your support. And if you guys would like to know what the heck is a co-producer and you haven't listened before, we will sum up a little bit at the end. So stay tuned and we'll tell you what one is and how you can find out more. And we have to let you know there are still spots left on our 2021. I always usually use the word first, Pod Abroad 2021 trip in September of next year. We are so excited about it. We've still got a few spots and we'd love to have you join us to find out all about that trip. Visit podabroad.com.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 33, entitled, In Which Mrs. Bug Takes a Hand and a Pillow.
And does something with them.
And it upon herself to do some stuff.
Besides, I mean, I don't know, because you can't, not going to get ahead. But up till this point, most certainly, this is her starring role. I mean, this is, I think, one of the chapters thus far that she has, I think, most, I guess, page time.
I have a question for you. Do you believe her? Do you believe her?
Ask me at the end.
Knowing what we know about Merdina Bug.
You mean knowing what we know about the end of book 8?
Yes. Knowing what we know about the bugs from future books, do you believe her?
You know, I never really doubted it because Brown was an so I didn't put it past him to taunt her, hit her the way that he had. The morning after, yes, that's a thing, Claire is feeling a bit better.
That's a pill, too.
Oh, sorry. No, there is no pill called the morning after. That's just the morning after. Claire is feeling a little bit better. Mrs. Bug is bringing her coffee, so Mrs. Bug is back, and some snacks, and asking if she's sure her mistress, are you sure your face will return to normal? She tells Claire about a woman she
that
knew.
That was funny.
It was very, there was a few. I'm telling you, this is Mrs. Bug's chapter, girl. This is her camp, not even a cameo. This is her big moment.
Well, and it's gone. It's not going to be in the show.
That's true. They took that away.
It's gone.
I know.
They're not going to do it. That which is another question. Do you believe they're even going to bother with the gold now? Because they've downplayed Mrs. Bug so much. They had Marsley kill Lionel Brown. So there will be no taunting. There will be no anything else.
The fact that they didn't that they had Marsley kill Lionel doesn't take away possibility of storylines for Mrs. Bug. I will say that much. Not necessarily. Or I should say, doesn't take away from the storyline possibilities for the gold. It's looking more and more like the gold is not going to have a big deal. And the way they described it is that Jocasta talks about how her daughter died, how she was shot. They got the gold. They brought it to the new world. And that's how they had their fortune. But there has been no mention of any store.
It feels like that's where they're leaving it. Like they're using the gold they took with them to fund their new life.
Which is sad because it goes in every single book from here on out.
Well, yeah.
So she's telling Claire about this woman she knew in Kirkcaldy who'd been kicked in the face by a cow, and this other dude from another town who, quote, got in the way of an English pike and cleaved off half his jaw and the better part of his nose. Claire goes to her surgery as Mrs. Bug shouts after, because Claire's like, I'm good. And she walks away, and Mrs. Bug is shouting after her about yet another dude who'd walked face first into a church door. Claire shuts her surgery door.
I loved the reference to tea they kept making, because that to me was a timeline.
Oh, yeah.
Was a timeline marker, right? Because they're like, we were almost out of tea and I couldn't see us getting tea for a very long time. And guess why? Because it was all thrown in the harbor, y'all.
I didn't even make that connection. I just thought it's been a
while. No, I was like, I just kept thinking, I was like, oh, look, here's something that, you know, is an indelible mark that places them on a certain place in history. So it was a nice little historical factoid that was thrown in there to kind of add to the creation of something that could be real.
So she goes there, shuts herself in the surgery for some peace, and then she goes into her own whiskey cache. I don't think it was a cask, but her own cache. She keeps just for times like these. I mean, probably it's medicinal. Completely medicinal. To while away the time, which I think I spelled wrong. I think it's W-I-L-E. I don't even know. I'm not going to worry about it because I'm just saying it. She flips through Rawlings' casebook. This is her own version of Mrs. Bug's story. So Mrs. Bug likes to talk and share disgusting, fascinating things. Claire just likes to read about disgusting, fascinating things. So she turns to a case about an enslaved woman with a rectovaginal fistula. And she tells herself, quote, how extremely fortunate that I am not pregnant.
You know, she says that, but then she questions it for like the next, I don't know, half of the chapter. Like she says, it's a good thing I'm not, but you have hot flashes just like you do in menopause, just like you do at the beginning of a pregnancy. And sometimes it's this, that, and the other. So I'm like, even she doesn't know yet. So it sounds like she's trying to convince herself more than anything else.
And she's relieved when Malva arrives. Malva reports on her father's hand. He's doing as well as can be expected. They head toward the kitchen to get her a... I remember this. And I made this word? I made this word up because I didn't want to copy... the book verbatim, so I said. And after she talks about how she reports on her father's hand, they head toward the kitchen to get her a reward biscuit. It's a biscuit, she says it's a biscuit with honey and butter or something.
It's
and
an
I just
American
say, oh, it's a reward biscuit.
Not a British biscuit. Because I've never seen anyone put honey on a cookie.
Yeah. So they go to get this reward biscuit and they hear a noise outside, followed by a loud groan. Mrs. Bug is there too. And holy smacks, the noise was Mr. Brown. He had crawled with one working leg, and a broken wrist. So he had crawled all the way over there through the mud, through the dirt, through the whatever, up onto her porch, and was there to avail himself of her pity, of her healing, all of that. And when they opened the door and he kind of, I'm guessing he can't get up on his knee because he got up on his good knee and he lunges for Claire and she steps back. She's like, nope, you're gonna fall on your face, dude. You're not gonna touch me. Mrs. Bug is not having it. She says to him, because he won't shut up, he's just talking like, madam, Mrs. Claire, whatever he says. He doesn't call her that, but I'm making that up. But he's calling her like, you know, have pity, all this. And Mrs. Bug is like, shut your noise, man. I just love it. And he won't shut up. Mrs. Bug hits it over the head with the meat mallet.
Good night.
That's another thing that makes that also makes me think. And we can't go into that because I'm not cutting more than one part of this show. So he'd crawled, dragging his broken leg from the Bug's cabin. And of course, Claire will treat him. So she needs help getting him into the surgery. And Mrs. Bug is not happy about this. So yeah, it's not just what she does to Bug. Excuse me, what she does to Lionel Brown. It's from the moment she learns it's him there. She tells him to shut up. She's not happy. She hits him over the head to shut him up. And now she's expressing, so Diana gives us a lot of opinion, I guess you could say, of Bug, Mrs. Bug. So yeah, it's definitely a through line of this chapter. So they get him finally to the surgery table before he comes to. And Brown begins to beg that they not let Jamie kill him. When Claire asks Mrs. Bug to bring her some hot water and whiskey, Mrs. Bug answers, "I will not. We should just be saving Mr. Fraser the trouble of dealing with the gobshite if he has another courtesy to die by himself." Unquote. He grabs her wrist, meaning Claire's, and begs again. Brown tells her that Jamie has said he will kill him, and he doesn't doubt him. He can't look her in the eye, though, when she reminds him that, "Look, you would have killed me if you had had the chance." He can't look her in the eye.
You tried multiple times.
Exactly. He insists on touching her and grabbing her hand, and this is vile to her, and it puts her right back in the place where she was, and it makes her want to vomit. And this is interesting. This is very interesting. Can't say too much because, again, not going ahead of ourselves. But even though she knows that Lionel Brown couldn't have been the Martha dude to rape her, right? The Martha's widower. Mm-hmm. She knows for a fact it's not him because he broke his leg and he was on a whatever they put him on. He couldn't get over there. Quote, "Yet I felt he was and swallowed my bile, my head going suddenly light." Unquote. So even though she has 99.9% proof that this guy in front of her now, who had a broken leg then, has a broken leg now, there's no way he could have been the dude who called for Martha. She's still brought to that time and her body is reacting as if he could have been, right? So she's immediately wants to vomit because she's still, you know, heavily, she's still got the wounds, obviously, but she's still right smack dab in her trauma, especially with this guy here. So Brown is crying. She tells Malva to give him some tea, get some bandages and go home. She then tends to the injured man in front of her. And when she's done, she's cleaning herself, quote, "as though he harbored some vile contagion."
He does. Unquote. It's called
because
Lionel.
She couldn't help herself. It is called Lionel, but you could also say it's called Brown. But I guess that's a bit much.
Well, but the thing is for the most part, the Browns are not bad. Until recently, the Browns were not bad. In the book, they were just another family that had a large outposty thingy. And, you know, they trusted them enough to give them a baby. I mean, it's not like they didn't have anything against the Browns until Lionel went and screwed everything up and basically started a war.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we still don't know why or how Lionel joined. That is weird.
I mean, Lionel's an ass. He's always been an ass. He beat his wife. You know, he's always been... the dark brother of the two, right? So Richard Brown was the
definitely less responsible.
And Richard, his brother, was much more, you know, responsible and honest, blah, 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 blah. And Lionel was the dark sheep of the family who was probably the younger brother, didn't have to live up to his older brother. So he just did whatever he wanted. And he always had his older brother to look out for him. So everyone respected his brother enough to let him do what he wanted. And he got away with...
Yeah, because if they
have to mess with
him...
With
yeah,
Richard.
Exactly. So since he wants to do nothing... I mean, he wants to save himself, but he... Now that he's been tended to as much as they can, and he won't shut up, and he wants to talk. She's like, oh, gosh, fine. So she asks him about Donner. What was that dude's name? Brown said it sounded, quote, Indian. His name was Wendigo. Claire knows that this just happened. Like, okay, Diana, we got it. So Claire just happens to know exactly what Wendigo means because Brianna, back in their day, had done a school project about a monster from the mythology of a northern tribe. So Claire knows what the name of the monster is from, as I said, from the mythology of some northern tribe. And the reason she knows that is because Brianna did a project and she illustrated or drew or painted whatever. She drew a sketch of something of this monster called Wendigo. And it actually spooked Claire. But so she knew the name right away. Just happened to know that name.
Children's artwork is spooky anyway. But the type of drawing she did made me laugh too, because it was crayons. Huh. And then you paint black over it. And then you scratch the black off.
We totally did that at Wonderland.
Yeah, so it's the colors coming through. Exactly. I'm just saying, it's creepy. And it's a monster anyway, so I'm like, that's just creepy.
So Wendigo, Donner had stayed in Brownsville only for a few weeks. and he'd arrived with Hodgepile, and he caused no trouble. And Lionel then says, he could find out more, dot, 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 when I go home, dot, dot, dot. And he asks for water, and she gets Mrs. Bug to get it to him. And she is beginning to feel, in the afternoon, so who knows how long they were there together as a threesome party, whatever, people inside. But in the afternoon, she's beginning to have a hot flash. So she goes outside to the well and drinks water, pours water over her. And this is another time she thinks about pregnancy. She's pretty sure she's not pregnant, but the whole hot flash thing, it could be either way. When she goes back into the surgery, she finds Mrs. Bug leaning over Brown, holding a pillow over his face. After a shocked pause, like she didn't rush in. She was like, wait, huh? She tries to pull Mrs. Bug off of him.
What am I looking at?
Exactly. She can't pull, so she pushes. And then she throws herself on her, and they fall to the ground. Like, it took her two or three tries.
It's like when you walk in and find your dog eating almond rocas out of the kitty litter box. You have a moment where you're like, what is he doing? And then you're like, ew, stop it.
Do you guys have that?
No, because I have special litter boxes that are top loading, so the cats have to get in from the top, but the dog can't reach in.
Have you noticed the difference with the little dude now that he's had his snippy?
I mean, he's still a but he's a little less dicky.
Does he cuddle with you guys?
He cuddles more with Sean than he cuddles with me. I think he knows I took his
balls.
Does
he get along with Benny?
It's hard to say. I can't, because he's always playing death from above with Ben, and Ben is not into it. So Ben's life now consists of trying to walk from room to room without being attacked.
So it sounds like my babies, you have two that mimic kind of mine. Although, anyway, not exactly, but you have one whose life is, whose much of her day consists of trying to walk around and do the normal cat things without being pounced upon.
Sure.
Okay, so they fall to the ground, blah, blah, blah. When she gets up, she's like, okay, so I got her off of him. When she gets up, she goes to him and like, she sees that his hand is limp. He is dead. Mausetot.
You know, this whole passage, it kind of skeeved me out because I was like, ew, she was doing CPR on a dead man. I was like, wait, everyone who gets CPR is mostly dead. So I'm like, so maybe I need to not be so grossed out by the fact that she was trying to resuscitate a dead man, because that's what CPR is for, resuscitating dead people or mostly dead people. But I had that realization, and it's like, you know, that's what CPR is for. But I had that moment of like grossness, and probably that's just because it's Lionel Brown too. Yeah. But, you know, I don't like to think that every person who gives CPR is giving CPR to somebody who's already pooped themselves.
Yes. That's not something they teach you about in first aid.
<That's date. it.
laughs> If they've already pooped themselves, there's no chance.
No.
Actually, it wasn't even mentioned. Right. In all of our lifeguard training, it was never even mentioned. That's horrible.
No, because the intention of the whole act is that they're not going to be dead at the end of it, right?
So he was deed. So Mrs. Bug is sitting on a bench. She sees Carol. I don't know who Carol is. Carol. Claire sees from the stains on Lionel's sheets.
This is not The Walking
Dead.
I
don't even watch that show. So I almost said Carol again. Stop it. Claire sees from the stains on his sheets. From the stains.
That's what you were saying?
Claire sees from the stains on the sheets on Lionel that he'd been dead before she'd tried to resuscitate him. Like Summer said, I mean, technically people are kind of dead already.
Shit the bed.
But all that. She says, like completely at a loss. Why on earth did you do that? Enter Jamie. What?
She's like, well, that explains the chamber pot smell. Yeah.
And Jamie
was like, well, yeah.
Jamie, I don't know if I'm surprised. I don't know if I should be surprised, but I noticed as I was taking notes, Jamie is really, really soft with her. Very soft with her. He says, how could you have done this to a man who was his, to a man who was mine? And she says, I didn't mean to. And Claire says, she smothered him. And Jamie brings facts. You don't do that without meaning it.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. I'm like, you can't passively smother someone.
No, especially not with your locked jaw hands.
People roll over on their babies all the time.
That's a body. That's not holding a pillow over someone. But yes, you're correct. It's technically smothering.
I know. I'm just saying the act of smothering somebody is usually active unless you've rolled over and smothered someone.
Or if you accidentally sit on your cat.
And then it could totally have been an accident. But that was not, in fact, what Mrs. Bug did. She did not roll over on Lionel Brown in her sleep. She actively pressed a pillow to his
face. Well, then it comes out. While, and this is Mrs. Bug. You know what? Maybe we should talk. Having a hard time this morning. Maybe the title of this episode should be Mrs. Bug's Reasons or Mrs. Bug's Excuses or something like that. Because then her reasons, true or not, this is what she gives. Then it comes out. While he was staying with her in the Bug's cabin, he'd spoken to her meanly, cursing, threatening, saying his brother would come and they would slaughter them all and burn the houses down. And once he came to the surgery and Claire tended him, she and Brown saw that Claire wouldn't let him be killed. And Brown taunted her with this when Claire went out to relieve herself for her hot flash, saying he'd fooled Claire. He'd fooled Claire into saving him, basically. This is, so she says, what Mrs. Bug says set her off. Jamie tells her, go home. So in chatting with Jamie, Claire thinks, but it isn't time with regards to the house burning down, Brown's threat, that one threat of Brown's. And that gave her some little bit of comfort for that threat, at least.
Well, what's so funny is that just because they haven't been able to change history yet doesn't mean they can't.
Oh, that's true.
So she shouldn't feel safe. So there is, I mean, she shouldn't feel safe solely
because of one thing.
From fire. Yeah. I'm like, just because that fire, it's not time for that fire, doesn't mean that she can go to sleep with a lit fire every night and not worry about burning her house down. You know what I mean? You still should practice fire safety.
Will Lionel's death make things harder for Jamie with Richard? Who knows? Jamie is doing a little recognizance, he says. So the day after they'd gotten back with the rescue, the Lindsay brothers had left for Brownsville the morning after, and they're keeping an eye on the town. And they have people, fresh horses, I guess, or people along the way, so that they'll hear in time if they come. So if the Browns leave Brownsville and are on their way, Jamie will have notice at least a little bit before they arrive. At this point, Ian comes in, having heard from Mrs. Bug what happened. Jamie fills him in. Ian mentions that Brown has no marks on him and he's freshly bandaged. He says you can't tell by looking at him that he's been killed. Jamie mentions how
he might have died of himself.
Yes. And Jamie mentions how the Committee of Safety is like the watch in Scotland and that they're planning something. Jamie asks Ian how fast he can get to a certain. When I say they're planning something, I mean Jamie and Ian. Jan. You know, Marsha.
Marsha.
Jamie asks Ian how fast he can get to a certain village. And then Ian goes away, I'm guessing. So they're still in Jamie's study. While they're still there, Archbug comes in with an axe. He sees only Jamie, and he speaks in Gaelic and says, my life for hers. Mrs. Bug had followed him, but was waiting at the door. She is beside herself. Arch calls Jamie chieftain. And this kind of gave me chills. Diana writes beautifully, 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 quote, one word, and we stood in Scotland, unquote. An allegiance that had ruled the Highlands for 1,000 years, the oath of blood and iron, unquote. Jamie accepts the axe and then gives it back to him. He gives Arch back his life and the wife of his life. The life of his wife. Mm-hmm. Arch takes the axe, turns, and leaves. As if nothing had just happened, Mrs. Bug comes in and asks if there's anything she can get him to eat. And I know she's trying to return to normal.
She's
an interesting one.
She's like, well, if I just pretend, exactly. if I just act like nothing happened, maybe we'll all just be able to fall back into our old routines. I do it all the time. What's wrong with you? Haven't you ever been in a fight with somebody and then been like, so did you want lunch? If you were the lunch maker, generally.
She turns at the door and says, now remember, the chapter pretty much opened with Mrs. Bug tormenting Claire so much with gross stories that she had to lock herself away in in her surgery, right? The chapter ends pretty much with this kind of something similar. As she asked him if there's anything I can get you, and she turns to leave. But just as she's at the door, she turns and says, "I was there, Ken, when the Sassenachs killed your grandsire there on Tower Hill. There was a lot of blood. You're a credit to him." Unquote.
I should hope so. He was a huge man.
Summer.
Huge bodies have lots of blood in them.
And she leaves. So this is interesting. And I know this is a question and I'll finish the, I only have two lines left. I'll finish the lines and then I'll ask you. So they chat about this, Clara and Jamie. What do you suppose the Bugs were doing in London? And then about Jamie and the old fox, Claire says she sees something of him in Jamie. She says, she's like, oh, I don't know if you can be as ruthless as him. And she's like, no, you can be. And she, quote, felt somewhere in the marrow of my bones the popping sound of Arvin Hodgepyle's neck breaking. She's like, no, you can be. And Jamie says he does use people, only he tries not to let it show. And meanwhile, during this entire last final conversation, he's holding on to that little wooden stake, Sonny. So my question, Summer, is... it made sense in the story flow. It made sense in the flow of conversation. It made sense because of what happened in the scene. So I don't think it sticks out, but it also makes sense because this is like an scene on Mrs. Bug sharing yet one more kind of gross tale. It just happens to involve Jamie's grandsire. So my question is
paternal grandfather.
Yes. So my question is, what do you think the bloods? What do you think the Bugs were doing in London?
I want to know what the Bugs were doing in their cabin.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just...
And I want to know why she really killed him.
we hypothesize a little bit about that. But, and that's a question. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't think of anything. Unless they went down there to support him.
Wait.
And be present for his death. Because there was a bunch of people who went down who intended to bring his body back. Do you remember?
Oh, okay. I would have to go back and ask, like, crowdsource. So Archbug lost his thumb, or first two fingers, whatever, at an earlier, the Battle of something, but it wasn't at Culloden. It wasn't in the final uprising. But he was in Ardsmuir, so he did fight somehow. So Jamie was in hiding for 7 years, and then he let himself... He gave himself up, and that's when he went to jail, right? Went to prison. So I want to know, and I think Jamie was still in prison. I mean, I would have to Google this. Yes, I'm not. I haven't Googled it. I don't have the dates memorized. The old fox wasn't killed like 20 years later. So the Battle of the 45, or the Battle of Culloden is 1746. The 45 is when the uprising starts. So lodged in the Tower of London. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it was 2 years later. Simon awaited trial for high treason, which began in March 1747. Fast forward, the day of his execution, April 9th, 1747, saw many spectators arrive at I almost said Avocado Hill. No, Tower Hill. An overcrowded timber stand collapsed, leaving 9 spectators dead to Lovett's wry amusement. That is funny. His laughter at this incident, even as he was executed, is said to be the origin of the phrase to laugh one's head off. Among his last words was a line of Horace, I'm not going to read the Latin, but it translates to, "It is sweet and seemly to die for one's country." He died in his own eyes as a Scottish patriot. Even though he was definitely he was a complex character. Wasn't really great to women, but again, complex. Okay, so, and there's a little picture of Wardlaw Mausoleum, which we've been to a few times. Okay, so I will share that link in the show notes since... I brought it up, but so all that to say, my question is, if they were there, well, okay, Claire and Jamie, or Claire said, I wonder what they were doing there. My question is, was it both of them? Because Mrs. Bug did not go to prison, but I think Arch would have been in prison at that point. So I don't think it was both of them. I think it was just Mrs. Bug. And that's even more of a question.
Just her?
Well, I guess it's like, yeah, I think it's just her because I think Arch would have been in prison, number one. Although I could be wrong. I don't know that timeline exactly. But even if he was, whether he was or wasn't, it would kind of make sense that she might go down there. It would make more sense if she went with friends or her husband. But think about it. He, again, good man, bad man, whatever he did personally, he was, or at least he considered himself a patriot, and he was a Scot who was being executed for his part of the uprising, right? And Arch and probably Merdina were part of that old order. Definitely, again, they were part of the 15, if I'm not mistaken. Well, not Mrs. Bug, but Arch was. I think that's where he was. Sheriff Smear, I think, is where he was injured, or not injured, captured and then chopped his fingers off. So all this to say, was it the Bugs who went down there, or was it just her? Because I would have thought Mr. Bug was in prison. But that's a question for Diana, too. Dang it. Or maybe you guys, if you guys listen and you know this, let us know, because I cannot confuzzle my way out of this. So, yeah, that's and he's holding Sonny at the end. So I don't know. I mean, it's nice and touching and but like, is there a point to that? Or is it just, it's just a thing and who cares? Anyway, yeah, this was definitely, thank you, Summer, for kind of rocking and exploding my brain, rocking my world, exploding my brain, rocking my brain, all that.
You're welcome.
Oh, good gravy.
That was chapter 33. Join us next time when we will be beginning part 5, Great Unexpectations, with chapter 35 entitled Laminaria.
And again, a very special thanks to our co-producer for this episode, Kate O. To find out what a co-producer is and maybe see about becoming one on your own, you can find out more at patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, head on over to our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And I haven't posted it yet, y'all, but thanks to everyone buying masks, I now have a new Le Creuset pan. I'm going to take a picture of it and send it to you guys so you guys can all see part of what you helped to accomplish with your purchases of masks this year. Not only that, but also all of the money, again, with all of the purchases all of the proceeds from all of the purchases has been benefiting Broadway Cares, Equity Fights, AIDS, their COVID branch. If you have ever wanted to buy a mask or wanted to buy anything that has our logo or our artwork on it, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code Outlander20, Outlander20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.